ॐ अज्ञान ठिमिदं दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाखाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः वंशकल्पाथरूप्यश्च कृपासिन्धूभ्य एव च पतितानां भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते कोपेश गोपिका खंडा राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्तकंचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवे प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे I am very, very grateful for this very special opportunity to be with all of you this evening. My special gratitude to all of our very distinguished, exalted guests that are on the stage, and to all of you for extending your precious time to be with us this evening. Actually, I never wanted to write this book, but my dearest friend on his deathbed held my hand with tears in his eyes and made me promise to write it because he felt that people from all walks of life could gain hope and insight by this story. He passed away just a few days later, and in his honor, I wrote The Journey Home. My special gratitude to Sri Jukal Kishoreji. Spontaneously, he decided to translate it into the Telugu language, and he also was at the bedside of a person who just had an open heart surgery, and while he was helping this very great person, he was translating the book. It's a story that I believe gives an insight into how obstacles, challenges, and even tragedies can help us to grow in wisdom and closer to God if we just make the right choices. I was born in 1950 in Chicago. And when I became a teenager, it was the 1960s. It was an inconceivable, turbulent time in America. African Americans, because of the color of their skin, was condemned to live and die in the ghetto, in poverty, with practically no opportunities. Martin Luther King, inspired by Mahatma Gandhi, established the civil rights movement. Revolution without violence. But he was shot dead. And then in his name, all violence broke out. Literally, all over America, there were riots and cities were burning on fire. At the same time, there was another fire going on in Vietnam where there was a war. And for teenagers, when you became 18, even if you didn't believe in the war, there was a good chance you would be drafted and forced to either kill or go to jail. And millions of young people in my generation were demonstrating against that war. And in this country of America, the police and the military were brutally beating their own children and on occasions shooting them dead for peaceful demonstrations. At that time, America was the most wealthy and powerful country in the world. But such unrest. And I looked around me and saw everything was such a facade, so superficial, artificial, such little substance. I heard someone say that if you do not have an ideal you're willing to die for, you have nothing meaningful to live for. I wanted to find that ideal, meaning and purpose. When I was 19 in 1970, myself and a friend went to Europe just to try to find ourselves. As we were traveling, the first day, we got robbed, and we had no money. So that was a blessing, because we couldn't just be tourists. We really had to get to know people to survive. And we did what in America we call hitchhiking, where we stand, we walk, and if a car passes, we try to get them to drive us wherever they're going. We studied Judaism, the religion of my birth, more than ever before. We went to cathedrals and monasteries and studied Christianity with monks. Eventually, we were living on a Greek island, Crete, in a cave. And every day I would climb to the top of a mountain to meditate and pray for direction. Should I go home back to college where my parents wanted me? Or was there something else I was supposed to do with this life? With many tears, pleading for direction, one night as the sun was setting, something happened that changed my life forever. I heard a voice. And I knew if I followed what this voice was saying, my life would never be the same. I had to leave behind the luxuries, the pleasures, and the security of everything I was given. I believed it was the silent voice of God in my heart that spoke three words: go to India. I had never met an Indian in my life. I didn't know where India was. I didn't have a map, and I had no money to buy one. But I had faith that if I just follow this call, something special will happen. I left my friend the next morning at sunrise and began hitchhiking through Greece, through Turkey, When I came to Istanbul, it was infested with a cholera epidemic. And I was brought into a place where we were trapped by people who hated us and wanted to kill us. We had nothing. I was with two others. Through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, every moment was life-changing. I'd like to share just one or two. While I was in Kandahar in Afghanistan, I was sitting in a little shack where six people were sitting on the ground drinking chai. I had never seen such poverty in my life. The ghettos in America were very, very luxurious compared to the common way of life in Afghanistan. Then a boy came in. He was about 16 years old. He was in such poverty. He was emaciated thin. He had filthy, torn up clothes and a little turban. And the part that really affected me was he was blind. His eyes were grossly discolored, swollen, and disfigured with nothing covering them. I never saw anything like that. He had a branch of a tree with a nail through a tobacco can and then a string across that was a one-stringed instrument. He thumped on that instrument, dong, 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 and sang songs of his love and his devotion to God. As he was singing, his face lit up. He was smiling in ecstasy. This was a culture shock for me. I was brought up in a land where I was told that having money, having good health, having a nice family, having prestige is going to make you happy. And here is someone who had none of that. And he was the happiest person I ever saw in my life. What really is happiness? His happiness was in sharing his love for God. And he couldn't even see if anyone was there. I continued the travel. It took 6 months of hitchhiking from London to ultimately reach the border of India. I was so enthusiastic with expectation to find the rishis and the sages and the lamas and all the yogis to learn from them. And now, through life-threatening experiences and so many diseases, I finally reached the border. And I was rejected. The border guard said, "We have enough beggars in India. Show me your money or go back." I had 26 cents. In about 5 different currencies. She wanted $200. I pleaded, I argued, I begged for 6 hours. She rejected me. At sunset, the guard changed, and a very tall, strong, elderly Sikh gentleman took the post. And when I approached him, he said, "I've already been warned against you. You are a nuisance. Go back." I started to cry. They weren't fake tears. They were real. Was I going to hitchhike all the way back after all this? There was no possibility. I begged him, just give me a chance to see your great people and your great land. And I promise someday I'll try to do something good for your people. Just give me a chance. From a wealthy family in the suburbs of Chicago, I was standing there, covered with dust as a beggar. He took my passport, looked in my eyes, and said, "Sometimes a man must follow his heart. I have been ordered by my superior officer to reject you, but I'm going to give you the chance that you're crying for." He stamped my passport and said, "Welcome to India." It was a mystical experience because I started walking through this agricultural field in Punjab. I knew no one. I was alone. I had nothing. I didn't know whether to go right or left. But just looking at the stars and the trees and the landscape, it was the first time in my entire life I truly felt that I was home, practically being embraced by my mother. I went to the Himalayas. The first day, a sadhu came up to me and told me, "I know who you are, but you don't know me. Take off your Western clothes and throw them in Mother Ganga, and I will give you the robes of a sadhu." I said, "What is a sadhu?" He said, "A wandering hermit who is seeking the truth." So I took off my jeans and my turtleneck shirt. It was the only clothes I had because everything else was stolen on my trip. They were swept away by the Ganges, and he gave me two pieces of cloth just like this, but white. And then he walked away after telling me that the Ganges will be my mother. After doing some tapasya on a rock in the Ganges for some time, I roamed the Himalayan mountains, going to various ashrams, meeting yogis, rishis, lamas, saints, sitting at their feet, receiving their blessings, their wisdom. Sometimes I lived in jungles, sleeping in caves and riverbanks. And I was so happy with this life. From time to time, I would write home to my mother and father, telling them what a beautiful life this was. I thought they'd be proud of me. But I was 19 years old and foolish. Every word of my letters broke their hearts with worry. They loved me. But I believed that if I followed the calling of my heart, that God would bless them too. I lived with one sadhu named Kailash Baba. I was 20, he was 65 or 70. He was a huge yogi who for 50 years wandered alone in the jungles. He taught me which herbs from the ground I could eat, which leaves and herbs were medicinal. He taught me how to live with leopards, snakes, scorpions, wild elephants, and lots of mosquitoes. He taught me that you must see that God is in their heart and respect them. If you respect them, that they will respect you. But if you have arrogance and feel that you're superior to them, or if you have any fear of them, living this life, they will kill you. Honor them
respect them, and have no fear.
Now, I was used to taking courses where you have some time to study for the exam. But those creatures were all around me while he was teaching me. It was a crash course. The interesting thing, he taught me so many things, but he didn't speak a word of English and I didn't speak any Hindi. It was just by gestures, by intonations, by lifting of eyebrows, by pointing to something. Because he really cared about me. I learned if a teacher really cares about a student and a student really wants to learn, that language is not a barrier. There's a transmission of wisdom from the heart. I lived in a cave with a yogi named Tatwala Baba, who would meditate about 20 hours a day sometimes. And after that, going higher and higher into the Himalayan jungles, I came to one place. I was terrified. All around me were people in total desperation, sleeping in the ground, in the cold. Many of them had no fingers, no noses. They were desperate. It was a leprosy colony. About 15 or 20 of them surrounded me in a tight circle and were putting their hands in my face, screaming out with desperate eyes, "Bakshish, bakshish!" They saw my white skin and felt I must have money. But I had nothing. I really wanted to help these people, but I had nothing. And they wouldn't let me go. And I was thinking, from what I heard, leprosy is contagious. They were breathing on me. Blood and pus from their fingers was getting on me. They wouldn't let me go. 20 minutes passed. I was traumatized. It was a culture shock. You don't find these people in the suburbs of Chicago. Finally, they searched me thoroughly and saw that I had nothing and let me go. I took a couple steps and was stopped in my tracks by what I saw. About 15 feet to my left was this old leper woman. Her face was decomposed, her nose was sunk into her face, she had no fingers or toes, she was laying on her left side. Most of her gray, white hair was gone in rags. She was offering pranams to me. And as she gazed into my eyes looked into hers, and I saw the love of a mother. It was as if she was saying to me through her glance that she felt the pain that I endured from her people. She felt for me, and I saw something else in her eyes, that she was totally alone and forsaken, and she wanted what every mother wants, the chance to bless a child. She was yearning for that. I ran up to her and fell on my knees as she was blessing me. And I put my head under her hand. And as she was rubbing the top of my head with her disease-smitten hand, I heard her saying over and over again in Hindi, "May God bless you, my child. May God bless you." And I looked up at her face. It was illuminated. She was smiling. There were no teeth. Beautiful smile.
And there were tears of joy in her eyes. The joy of giving. The joy of loving. Now this may sound strange, but as I looked in her face, I was thinking, she is the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my life. What is beauty? Is it a thing of the ever-changing condition of the body? Or is real beauty the selfless, sacrificial nature of a heart that wants to love and serve? I left that place and sat on a riverbank and were thinking how we have a tendency to judge people by things that are superficial. But what's really in the heart? I continued my travels learning from all these different types of gurus. I went to Bodh Gaya, to Varanasi, to Pashupatinath. Then I happened to be in Bombay taking a Buddhist meditation course. And I was sitting for about 15 hours a day in meditation for 10 days. And after the course was over, I just wanted to walk anywhere. I was barefoot, but I was walking and walking and walking, and I came to one stoplight. And when I looked up, there was a big sign advertising a spiritual festival. It was at Cross Maidan. I entered into the park. There was a gigantic pandal tent. And in the evening, approximately 20,000 people of Bombay attended. And I was way, way, way in the very back. And there were some foreign people who looked like sadhus, and they were playing drums and dancing. And I was thinking, yogis and sadhus aren't supposed to dance. What is this? That's what I was thinking. And then the guru came on stage. He looked so graceful, so regal, yet so humble. He walked across the stage like a swan and sat on a red seat and looked out into the audience for a few minutes as the kirtan was going on. Then he called one of his followers and pointed somewhere. And that follower was asking someone to come on the stage, but no one came. So that man came down and walked all the way through tens and thousands of people to come all the way to the very back. Then he walked right up to me. I was sitting there with these, I only had one set of sadhu robes, and they were dingy and gray and torn up, and I was sitting there in the back. He walked right up to me and said, "My Gurudev wants you to sit with him on the stage." I said, "How does he know me?" He didn't answer. He just grabbed me by the hand and pulled me. And by this time, I was really accustomed to being pulled into places where I didn't know where I was going. He pulled me through all the crowds, right up to the top of the stage, and brought me right before his guru, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada smiled on me. Such an oceanic, compassionate smile. His eyes were filled with tears of compassion. And he asked me to sit beside him, which I did. And as he was leaving, after he gave his lecture, he said, "Every day, the next 11 days, I will be giving classes morning and evening, we invite you to sit with us. Actually, at this moment, from March 25th to April 4th, is the 40th anniversary of when I first met my spiritual master. But I didn't accept him as my guru. I just accepted him as one of the great, great saints of India. And I went back to the Himalayas and lived with Dalai Lama and his people, and then with so many other yogis, and everything happened. And ultimately, on a third-class train, crowded with people, for 40 hours, with no food or water and hardly any air, 5 o'clock in the morning, the train stopped at some station, and I crawled out a window just to get some water, and the train left without me. I was totally lost. I was on my way from Varanasi to Amarnath for a pilgrimage. I asked someone, "Where am I?" A sadhu told me, "This is Mathura, Krishna's birthplace, and today is Janmashtami, Krishna's birthday." I planned to stay 3 days, but on the third day I got typhoid fever, and I couldn't even stand up. And some people picked me up. They saw me laying on a riverbank with vultures circling me. Some farmer picked me up and threw me in the back of an ox cart and took me to a charitable hospital, which from American standards was not much better than being with the vultures. And after about 10 days, the doctor, whose name was Krishna Gopal, he said, "If you travel, you will die. You have to stay." And by the time I got better, just living with the Brijabasis, understanding what is bhakti, the path of devotion, what is Radha, the feminine potency of the Absolute, the personification of love. I was fascinated by this mystical philosophy and the sweetness and beauty of how people practiced it. I decided to stay in Vrindavan for the rest of my life. I found in this great path of bhakti, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavat, the very essence of all the great religions that I had studied throughout my life. There's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam I learned. Savai pungshang paro dharmo yato bhaktiradhokshije ahoitaki aprati hataya yatma suprasidati. That the supreme dharma is that which awakens love of God from within the heart. Such love must be unmotivated by any selfishness or ego, and uninterrupted by any impediment of this world, in order to completely satisfy the heart. Then I read a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gabihastini suni chaiva swapake cha pandita samadarshana. What is real knowledge? Who is a learned person? Not a person that just accumulates large quantities of data in their brain. That may be good. Real knowledge, according to the Gita, is the ability to see every living being with equal vision. Whether one is a Brahmin or from no caste at all, whether one is a human or an elephant or a cow or a dog, the source of life is the Atma, the soul. That soul is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, Satchit Ananda. And the Gita, Krishna says, Aham Bija Pratapita. I am the seed-giving father and mother of every living entity. Wherever there is a life, there is a sacred part of the divine, of God. Why don't we see it? Why don't we appreciate it? All the problems of the world are ultimately due to forgetfulness of this reality which is within all of us. And when I heard my guru, Srila Prabhupada, explain this verse, it transformed my heart. In the Bible, it is said to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. That is the first and great commandment. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, teaches that. When we realize the love of God that is dormant within our hearts, then naturally, spontaneously, we will have love for every living being. The conflict between religions today are because people become so attached to the external, superficial forms of the religion, but do not understand the essence of the purpose behind them. The purpose is to have love and compassion for every living entity. Mother Earth, all forms of humans, whether one is Hindu or Muslim or Christian or Jain or Parsi or Zoroastrian or Buddhist or Jew or agnostic or atheist, or whether one is black or white or red or yellow or brown in color, male or female, educated or uneducated, every living being within these bodies is a sacred child of God. You cannot love God without loving every child. This is true religion, whatever you want to call it. You can judge a tree by its fruit. I saw this in such a sweet, beautiful way in Vrindavan. And I was so thankful. In Vrindavan, they worship God not as an all-powerful, angry old man who punishes sinners and creates universes, but Navayovanamcha, an eternal, youthful Lord whose supreme opulence is sweetness, love, and compassion, and who plays the flute. This charmed my heart, the logic, the philosophy, and the experience. So I dedicated my life to helping my Gurudev to share this love with people in the world. And interestingly, my mother and father came to India 5 times. And they are, it's hard for me to say that, but they're probably among the proudest parents in the world. They love India. They love the people of India. And they talk about it constantly. This book, The Journey Home, was written to express my sincere gratitude to all my teachers, to my guru, and to the great land of India. It's incredible, all-encompassing, deep culture. And the beautiful people of India, who gave me more than I could ever repay. I thank you very much.